Hello and welcome to the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com. Finally, we are off Corsica and on dry land and here in Nice for today's team time trial, our first outdoor podcast of the tour as well. My name is Richard Moore and I'm joined once again by Daniel Freeb, and making his 2013 Tour de France debut fresh from Glastonbury, Lionel Burney. Lionel has a bit of catching up to do, as I realised when I asked him who won stage two and he replied, the Rolling Stones. So we have lots to talk about today. Lionel, hello.
Hello there, Richard.
Hello, Daniel. Oh, pardon, we're going to order beer first. Merci. So here we are, chaps, in civilization. Not to suggest that Corsica wasn't civilization, but
Glastonbury wasn't.
And Glastonbury certainly wasn't. Here we are in a bar in Nice. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Lionel, we'll get your Glastonbury report a little bit later, perhaps, and we'll test you throughout this podcast to make sure you have been following a little bit of the tour. First question, was there a bus stuck under the finish on stage one?
That sounds absolutely preposterous, so I'll say no, that didn't happen.
It couldn't possibly have happened. Let's talk more seriously about today's team time trial. Always an event of great intrigue. Sorry for the background noises, but we quite like them, and hope you do as well. Team time trials always promise a lot, or there's certainly a lot of intrigue around them. Did today's deliver? It was a pretty straightforward out and back pan flat course.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think team time trials are at their best when they're at their worst for the teams involved. You know, when they're long, when there's a spectre of disaster. Complete disaster, teams falling apart, when that looms over them. And today, you know, it was a limited distance from the 25 kilometres. Apart from Noval's collision with a photographer, I think, which I understand Saxo Bank were, well, understandably furious about, I don't think there were any major implosions, were there?
Yeah, he's off to hospital, you know, apparently he's surgery in his hand. He is quite an important teammate for Contador, so that could, you know.
Yeah, I actually saw him on his way. We actually passed him. I don't think we realised at the time that was him on his way to hospital. But he was walking fairly gingerly, but looked okay.
Basically, what happened?
How was your first day at the tour, Lionel?
Well, being parachuted into the tour on day four, it's a little bit disorientating because the narrative has already started to unfold a little bit. You guys have been on Corsica and I've missed it all, and I don't know who anybody is or what's gone on or who's riding.
Lionel didn't
even set for Bradley Wiggins, weren't you?
He didn't even set foot on the Mega Smeralda, did you? You didn't even know what we're talking about.
I don't. No.
Yeah, what, you've not even been listening to the podcast? Unbelievable.
Well, people at Glastonbury listen to the podcast.
They may well have been, yeah, but it certainly didn't make an appearance.
They played it in the silent disco. But what did you make of it, Lionel? What did you make of today? Sorry, you were talking about Noval, I think.
Well, Noval, this is the Saxo Bank rider who, from what I gather, basically clipped a photographer by the side of the road, and whether it hit the photographer or the camera, either way, he's possibly broken a bone in his hand, is a very early report, but we'll wait and see what comes of that. But looking at the results, as Daniel said, it's been a stage where a bit of shadow boxing for the teams that have got general classification contenders. Yes. Contador and Froome separated by only 6 seconds, so really it's another one for those teams and those riders to chalk off as negotiated, you know, without anything catastrophic happening.
I think looking at the overall picture, we'll get onto Green Edge in a bit, but looking at the overall picture, I think Team Sky and Chris Froome were the winners today. And I spoke briefly to Chris Froome after the stage, and here's what he had to say about his own ride and about that of Geraint Thomas, who's been riding the last couple of days with a broken bone in his pelvis. You maybe didn't realise that, Lionel, but he's been riding with a broken bone in his pelvis and suffering a lot of pain the last 2 days, and he was really dreading today's stage. So here's Chris Froome on his own ride and Geraint Thomas.
How was that?
Yeah, I'm really happy with that. Third time, I think, at the moment, just 3 seconds down on Orica Green Edge. So that's, I think, keeping us in perfect position at the moment, and not having the added stress of being in the leader's jersey. Even though it would have been a bit of an extra, a bit of a bonus today if Eddie could have been in yellow for tomorrow.
That was Geraint.
That, I think, is the heroic story of the day. Geraint Thomas not only managing to hang on, but he actually did some pretty solid turns there and definitely helped us to get that time that we did today.
Dave Brills said on the eve of the tour it was a a team that's primarily for the mountains. Was that a factor, do you think, in you not winning this team time trial?
I think if we were thinking about winning it today, that would have definitely included more sort of flat engines. But knowing the guys who we have, that's a really satisfactory time. We're really happy with that.
How did you feel personally?
Personally, I felt really good. Felt like I was able to do a little bit longer pulls on the front. I'm feeling like I'm really coming into some good form now ahead of the mountains. And obviously, the goal is to get the yellow jersey, and we missed it by just 3 seconds today. But if we were in the yellow jersey, it would mean that tomorrow and the next couple of days, which are predominantly flat, we'd be on the front doing all that work, which I think would be a bit of unnecessary extra work at the moment for such a small advantage. If we had taken yellow, it would have only been by a few seconds, so it gives us a few more days to be in the peloton and wait until the mountains come where I feel the team will really excel.
You're listening to the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com and Sharp.
So Sky were the winners if we're looking at the big picture perhaps, but looking at the smaller picture, I think a mea culpa for Green Edge is in order for us, because we wrote them off, or didn't write them off, but certainly were quite dismissive of their chances at the Tour on Sunday, before Simon Gerrans won on Monday. You know, describing them as a misfiring team, a team with nobody, no obvious leaders or winners in it, and yet they've won two stages in a row. I think today's victory was a real surprise, wasn't it? Or it was to me.
Yeah, it was a surprise with the personnel that they've got in the team, because they didn't bring their heaviest artillery in terms of team time trials. I think Sven Tuft was one of the big rulers that they have got in their team, but they've got a lot of quick, fast guys, and we said that today's route would be ideal for a team with, you know, with that blend of very good time trialists and quick riders. You know, you need pace for a team time trial, and they certainly had that. And you know, it seems that Gerrans is just on fantastic form, and I think he's not the only one in that team. And they're on a roll. I think everyone pointed that out today, that the monkey's off their back, and I think they can ride with a lot more freedom now. I think Matt Goss is still under a certain amount of pressure, personally, but I think the team itself is really liberated.
Tomorrow is perhaps a stage that he could aim for under normal circumstances, and with the confidence that must be flowing through that team now, anything must be possible.
Well, that's what happens in races like the Tour de France, isn't it? Once you get onto a roll, you know, it's a cliche, but winning is a good habit to get into. And it's the complete opposite to Green Edge's fortunes last year, when they had a shocker on their Tour debut. But when you look at their lineup of riders, you realise that it's a real kind of solid sort of team unit. So I don't think necessarily you should be all that surprised. They remind me of kind of the Garmin Sharp team from maybe 2-3 years ago, when they specifically
had Tyler
targeted
Farrar.
Yeah, and they had, like Daniel was saying, sprinters who can also turn in a really good, you know, put in some real injections of pace in a team time trial effort, particularly on that long, flat, straight road on the Promenade
exactly.
des Anglais there.
I mean, I think at Quickstep they mentioned today that Stegemans, actually, if you look at the results, was dropped at the end, but I think he put in a key turn approaching the final straight, and you know, almost did a lead out. And you know, it's small contributions like that can prove to be vital.
I heard a great story about Stegemans today, that apparently when he crashed on Saturday along with Tony Martin, apparently once the dust kind of settled and they were both sitting on the road, he turned to Tony Martin and said, "Tony, I think we've crashed." I don't know whether that's true or not, but that was the story going around today. So maybe Stegemans thought he was leading out Cavendish up there.
Well,
on the Promenade des Anglais.
You say that, but if you look at the teams, Orica, Amiga Pharma, Sky to an extent, Lotto Bellisol in fifth place, they're teams that are used to that kind of either a lead out effort or pace-setting effort in mountain stages.
But then you look at the other end of the scale, and Argos Shimano, I mean, their complete ineptitude, I have to say, in team time trials, certainly in this team time trial, is a complete mystery to me, because they've got a lot of big rouleurs in that team, and They really should fare a lot better.
They've lost 1 minute 47 over 25 kilometres.
Struggling to make the time limit there, Team Argos.
They all finished together. So maybe they're thinking of the flatter stages in the next couple of days to come. I mean, they're not going to win
true.
This. So
that's true.
It's interesting because that, I mean, if you're not going to win the team time trial, what is, and if you're not got someone for the overall, then what is the point of just, you know, going really, really deep and suffering? Because, you know, the guys who were riding to win today or riding to, you know, keep an overall contender in contention, they all speak about this event with an awful lot of dread and fear. It is a daunting prospect that it's only 25 kilometres, but that pain that they the depths to which they go to for this kind of performance, it can take an awful lot out of you, I think.
Just going back to Green Edge, and you talked about how, I think one of you talked about how the Gerrans had targeted the first part of the stage. Now, it's interesting, I've heard a couple of people mention that. I think David Miller talked about his race ending when the Tour left Corsica, and he'd really focused on the first three stages. And, you know, in this era of, we talk a lot these days about specialisation, you know, focusing on the Tour, focusing on certain races in the season, but actually it's even more specialised than that now. It's very wise of Green Edge to pick out, you know, a certain period of the Tour and focus on that, and especially the start of the Tour, because we see teams who have not won anything and it gets to the week three of the Tour and then it becomes almost impossible to get into breakaways because everyone is scrapping for those last crumbs. So I think they've, you know, if that's what they've done, they've looked at the first week and said that's where we can have our success. I think it's very smart.
It's interesting how the sport is being kind of carved up, a race like the Tour is being carved up into bite-sized pieces that different teams and different riders are targeting.
And it's interesting you mentioned David Miller there, because Garmin Sharp obviously went into today's team time trial thinking that they could have put David Miller into yellow, but Jonathan Vorter said to me afterwards that they're kind of where they fell short today was because they've got particularly Dan Martin and Andrew Talansky and to perhaps a lesser extent Tom Danielson, they've got the climbing domestiques there, or the climbing, you know, the climbers.
Yeah, the climbers.
Later in the race. And if they had specifically wanted to win this team time trial and targeted the opening part of the Tour, they would have picked a different roster, perhaps brought some of the heavyweights, some of the guys that can give Navardauskas a bit of a dig out.
They are hedging their bets a little bit, aren't they? Because they want you to turn those mountain domestiques. They're not. They're a strong climbing team. They probably want to place one of those guys in the top 10. That's one of the traditional sort of Garmin Sharp aims, isn't it, to have a rider up there in the top 10. I think they want to do an awful lot of things, and we spoke about this the other day. There's a danger that you know, that they go close.
Yeah, it'll be win or bust for them. I mean, they could come home with a massive haul of, you know, different successes, jerseys, stage wins.
But you know, it's so fickle, isn't it? You know, we're now kind of toasting Orica Green Edge for their incredible 24 hours or 48 hours, if you want to call it. I mean, today was a fantastic win for them by 1 second.
And Gerrans won by millimeters yesterday.
Gerrans won thanks to a fantastic decision by Daryl Impey, and a split second decision. These are tiny margins, aren't they? And Miller, you know, lost out yesterday on Sunday by a tiny, tiny margin. And these are the margins between having a really good tour and a really nondescript tour.
Certainly is in the first week, and as Daniel says, the key is to get off to a good start and to be a factor in the race early on, because as the days tick by, particularly after we go through the sprint stages this week, when there's only a certain number to go round, the longer a team goes without a stage win or making some kind of impact on the race, once the desperation sets in, and then it becomes a matter of having to do something rather than sort of wanting to make something happen, that's when you see teams kind of losing heart a little bit in sort of the middle of the second week.
And that applies to seasons as well. We've seen teams before, you know, say that they're only going to peak for the Spring Classics, they're only going to peak for the Giro, etc., etc. But if you don't hit the ground running, then the rot can very easily set in, and then you can have a dreadful season. Whereas, you know, if you say we're going to go in firing straight away, then often the momentum carries through the whole season.
This is a humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast with Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
while we're still sort of talking about Orica Green Edge, I spoke to Anthony Tan, an Australian journalist who we, Daniel and I, have, and I think Lionel as well, have podcasted with in the past. There's a clamour, I think, for Anthony to join us, Tan Man as he's known, on a podcast, and he will. He
was mainly, the clamour is mainly coming from Tan Man, isn't it?
No, there's a little bit of consensus forming on Twitter that he really needs to join our future podcast, and he will. But I grabbed a little chat with him after the stage, talking about Green Edge. I'm in a little corridor in the press centre with the legend that is Tan Man. Tan Man, we wanted to get you on the podcast, here, but like the other Australians, you're very busy covering the Green Edge story.
I'm not busy.
Tan Man, we'll get you on the podcast another time, I promise. You are busy, aren't you, covering the Green Edge story?
I am busy.
What do you make of Green Edge? We've been kind of slagging them off. We were at the start of the tour, obviously the bus happened, and then we didn't feel it was a team that would necessarily do much here. They've kind of proved us a little bit wrong the last couple of days.
Well, they proved me wrong too, because I was rather scathing of them in a column I wrote on the SBS Cycling Central website a couple of days ago about how I felt that perhaps Matt Goss was getting, not paid too much, but he wasn't delivering for what he was getting paid, and what I believe he's getting paid is around 1.3 million euros. So that's a lot, given that
that's
he's
a
only...
Lot of
I mean,
snacks
that's,
on the barbecue,
that's basically, according to my calculations, that's 650,000 euros per victory, since he's only won two races in 2 years.
Your calculations are correct there, Tan Man.
Well, I am from for those who don't know me, I am from a Chinese background, so that helps with my mathematical skills are quite, you know, innate, really.
Yeah, no, I know. We've always been aware of that. So you're surprised then by the last couple of days, Garen's yesterday and then the team winning.
Oh, yeah, I thought the bus crashing into...
The barrier was going to sum up their tour.
Yeah, there's a specific word for that arch. How do you describe it? It's not the barrier or the arc. I saw I can't remember what the word is, but anyway, I thought
not so good on memory as you are with maths.
No, that was
not
I thought
so
that
good
was
with
an
words
omen.
As you are with I numbers.
I thought it's a bit of a shocker, isn't it? Given that I'm a journalist, but anyway,
you're kind of a journalist.
Yeah, I am. I'm quite reputable, really, in my own eyes.
Anyway,
I thought that was an omen as to what may happen.
Exactly.
In fact, my travelling colleague Ian Chadman from the Telegraph, that being the London Telegraph, he read out to me a very scathing précis of Green Edge in the, I think it was the Cycle Sport Tour de France preview.
You're plugging an awful lot of rival publications and organs here.
Oh, I don't read those magazines anymore,
okay.
And I don't think
your
enough listeners
enough
should read
that.
Them either.
Enough of that, Tan Man.
Really,
Tan Man.
If you just read my columns,
we do.
Know everything.
So what can we expect from Orica Green Edge for the rest of the tour?
Matt Goss
going to win tomorrow?
In fact, I said it after yesterday, this has got the Tour de France monkey is off their back, they're on a roll, and that's why in today's press conference I asked Gerrans, do you think that you could have won today without having won yesterday? Because they really used up every single member of their team to win the stage yesterday with Gerrans, and then they did the same thing again to prosecute their objective to win the team time trial.
Here's an omen for you that's just occurred to me. Last time a road race stage finished in Montpellier, who won it? Robbie Hunter.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking
and
about...
And where is he from? South Africa.
Yeah.
And is there a South African rider on the Orica Green Edge?
Yes, there
Dan
is.
Dan Olympic, he'll win tomorrow.
Well,
that's the omen.
Well, I think as our esteemed colleague and friend Daniel Free mentioned, you know, that the course today was suited for a sprinters type team. It wasn't a pure team time trial team. So they don't have as credentialed a time trial as a Martin or a Cancellara or anything like that, but it was their unity that they displayed. They said, I know all these teams go on about, oh, we're all mates and all this sort of stuff, but they really are, but some of them get a little bit too matey. I think it is regarded as a bit of a boys' club. You have to also ask the question, why are certain riders not joining Orica Green Edge? For example, Richie Port was made a very lucrative offer by
Mark Renshaw as well.
Mark Renshaw. Yes. Then there's another guy, one of the next big talents, Nathan Earle, who's joining Team Sky next year. You know, there are William Clark, he's riding for Argos Shimano. So you have to ask, why
is that?
Well, I think it's because they don't, if you look at their pedigree, they don't come from the Australian cycling system. For example, they're a bit like Chris Froome. I remember that quote from, I know I'm going to plug another book, but the cycling anthology where you quoted David Miller saying that Chris Froome was a self-made man and Wiggins was a product of the system. These Australian riders for Orica Greenwich are a product of the Australian cycling system. Those riders who are not riding for Orica Greenwich are not part of the Australian Institute of Sport, and I think that has a lot to do with it. It's implied, but they won't actually say it.
Great. Taman, fascinating insights as ever. We're going to get you back on the podcast. Now, yesterday...
I can't wait. I'm frothing at the mouth.
Okay, yesterday you promised that if Peter Sagan didn't win, you would streak naked through Calvi. Today you promised that if David Miller wasn't in yellow jersey tonight, you would streak naked through Nice.
I've modified the nudity because I reduced the population of Calvi from whatever it was to zero last night because I did stand outside the hotel room balcony, the Juliet balcony in the hotel room.
Enough.
Yeah.
Are you going to do it tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to do it in not a mankini, but a tankini. Oh, so hot.
We'll get some pictures of that and tweet them.
Okay.
This is the humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast, powered by Sharp.
So here we are, still in Nice, sitting outside a bar on an increasingly noisy street. There was a dog fight going on a minute or so ago.
Yeah, the second dog fight since we've been here.
We've chosen well, chaps, here. Let's do our first competition of this tour. Thanks to Humans Invent and Garmin Sharp. We've got signed Garmin Sharp kit, I think, to offer for our first prize. We'll also be offering some of our various books as the tour progresses. And later this week, there's a thrilling... Well, it could be thrilling, I'm not sure, but there's a phone call from Jonathan Vauters up for grabs. If you can grab a phone call, I don't know. But anyway, there's a phone call from Jonathan Vauters for a lucky winner.
That's a great prize.
It's a unique prize. Let's do our first competition. Right. The question is, who do you think will win Wednesday's stage to Marseille? Yeah. Please enter by 1 p.m. UK time. And if you can tweet your answer or your prediction with the hashtag HumansInventTDF. That's HumansInventTDF. If you can hashtag that, we'll pick it up and we'll pick out the winner. If there are several correct guesses, we'll pick in the winner out of a hat after the stage.
The Tour de France with HumansInvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
For our final part of tonight's podcast, guys, we did ask for questions yesterday, and they did. There was a flood of questions, so let's take these one by one. First of all, Luke Coleman asks, when do you think Gerrans will lose the jersey, and will Sky be happy taking it on Axe Trois Dames, Saturday's first Pyrenean stage?
Yeah, I would say so. I would think that climb will suit Chris Froome. It's quite steep. It's not dissimilar to La Planche de Belfield where he won last year. It's not quite as steep at the top, but it does have some very steep ramps, and it's very short actually, and I think Froome is the favourite to take yellow after that stage.
And you think Gerrans will hold on to it until then?
I would say so. I can't
see where, unless there's some kind of crazy split in the wind in the next couple of days.
Yeah, and they will fight tooth and nail to keep it.
And they're good at that, you know. Yeah. I think we're looking at Thursday stage to Montpellier, though. Is it Thursday stage or is Thursday stage?
Thursday to Montpellier, Friday.
In the Camargue, isn't it, where there's possibly the crosswinds. That could be an interesting stage. Bernard Fenning asked the same question. Owen P asking, what was the biggest surprise from the team time trial?
Lamprey, 7th, 25 seconds behind. Couldn't believe it. And also, I think Frances Desjeux were pretty good for considering the riders they have here, and You know, they obviously have Thibaut Pinot as their overall leader, but they only lost 42 seconds. I think that's a good performance by them.
I would say BMC being being only ninth, 26 seconds behind.
Yeah, very surprisingly poor performance by them.
And puts Van Garderen and Evans just that little bit extra behind Contador and Froome. So.
And they finished all over the place. Riders were dropped. So I don't know if they had a problem. Does anybody know whether they had a problem today? Or
no, they didn't. No.
Suggested they were going as fast, you know, that if they were dropping riders, that they were they were going fast or trying to. Journal Velo asked, how can Yorkshire beat Corsica for a great tour start apart from a higher finish line?
There'll definitely be more people in Yorkshire. I'm quite convinced of that. There'll be I think there'll be huge crowds in Yorkshire, maybe bigger than even London in 2007.
Yeah, because London will go to Yorkshire, won't it? I think it'll be. And the sport has moved on a pace since London in 2007.
It would be nice if Yorkshire could borrow some Corsican weather for the weekend, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Luke McLaughlin, this is maybe one for you, Lionel. How long before Geraint Thomas packs it in? If it's a fracture, surely he can't continue. And how serious for Sky and for Froome would it be to lose a rider as strong as Thomas?
Well, it's one of the things about the Tour de France that always amazes me is that it's the one race where riders never pack in unless they absolutely have to. I mean, you think back, I know it's slightly different, but in the 80s, Pascal Simon rode on for days and days in the yellow jersey with a broken collarbone, which under normal circumstances would be absolutely impossible. And there have been other examples in the past of riders who will just go through the pain barrier just to stay in the race, hang in the race as long as they can.
Let's not mention Tyler Hamilton again.
Well, and I think Geraint will, you know, possibly to the detriment of the rest of his season, he will push himself as far as he possibly can go, but I'd be surprised if he gets past the first Pyrenean stage.
Yeah, and he will be a loss, but let's not forget that Sky, if he does pull out, Sky were in a very similar position last year. They lost Konstantin Siutsu very early last year, and he was again a very versatile rider, good on the flat, good in the mountains.
And remember that last year also they had effectively a wasted place with Mark Cavendish in terms of trying to win the Tour overall.
Yeah.
I think I spoke to Dave Brailsford about this before the start, and the doctors in the team do think that if he has a relatively easy few days as he could do, then he will start to recover. It will start to heal even over the next week. So if he can get to the Pyrenees and get through the Pyrenees, I think
it's looking better. Wouldn't you?
I don't know. Here's a question probably for you.
That was dismissed.
you would go
very
home.
Much out of hand.
Well, yeah. I mean, as you say, I think that you know he's built, he's done an awful lot to get himself into shape, into condition for this tour. Said he lost a lot of weight as well. He really wants to see what he can do. If the, you know, he would pack with extreme reluctance, I would think. And I think the problem will come in the mountains, because he was saying that he can't really get out of the saddle very well. That's not really so much of a problem at the moment, but it will be a problem in the mountains. So if he's still not able to get in the saddle in the mountains, he will go home. Daniel, I think this is probably a question for you. This is Murdo McPhee. Is there anyone on the tour who has beaten a recent major winner at golf?
Does that include journalists?
Yeah, I think it probably does include journalists. Yeah.
Who posed this question? Murdo.
Someone called Murdo McPhee. Okay, do you know him?
No, but can you tell Murdo that I will research this thoroughly and I'll get back to him tomorrow. And if there are any stories to tell about said glorious victory over recent major winner, then I will tell them tomorrow.
A lot of questions about Geraint Thomas, actually. Robert G asked about Geraint. And Martin TB asked about Sagan. Can he hold on to it like last year? What chances for Greipel and Cavendish? And is bronchitis affecting Cavendish? We did ask Rolf Aldag about Cavendish's illness. He thought he'd maybe spent a little bit too long signing autographs in Glasgow after the winning the British Road Race Championship. He was very dismissive of Cavendish's health problems and thought he would overcome those this week. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I think he's fine. And I think the difficult stages, the stages that were really 50-50 as to whether he would be there at the finish, are gone now. And tomorrow is a fairly troublesome finale, but I think he'll be there at the end, and I think he'll be there the day after.
And again, today was a big, big test physically, and he obviously came through that very well, a second down. They almost won the stage.
And I mean, in terms of the green jersey, though, Sagan is already looking like he's got a pretty strong grip on that.
Yeah.
74 points already in the bag. Cavendish is currently on 25 points.
Mm.
That takes a lot of making up. I know it's very early. I know there's the intermediate sprints as well, but Sagan is good enough to hang in there and limit his losses on even the most conventional sprint stages. And then potentially could gain ground again come the hilly stages. So it's going to be tough for Cavendish to get back into that fight.
Final question from Dominic O'Brien. How have the culinary aspects of the tour been so far? What's been your best meal? Daniel. God, I'm struggling. I tell you, in Corsica, an awful, huge Italian influence, an awful lot of pizza and pasta in Corsica. I mean, we spoke about the Italian influence there, but you did feel at times that you were in Italy. The Corsican fare was quite rustic, quite basic. You know, on Saturday night we had it was just, you know, bits of meat with cheese and bread.
Yeah, there's a lot of sausage.
Yeah, a lot of sausage.
Well, I've not yet eaten
Corsican
on the tour.
Sausage is quite famous.
I've not eaten on the tour yet. I had a croissant
on
the plane.
Yeah, you're wasting
away. I am. I'm feeling...
What was the culinary fare like in Glastonbury?
The food at Glastonbury is excellent. The Goan fish curry is a particular highlight. Mm-hmm. And I had tartiflette one day, and I also had raclette. I've eaten better at Glastonbury.
It's a bit gentrified now, isn't it, Glastonbury? Very much gentrified.
Well, you'd have to see the toilets, and really? You'd probably revise your opinion there.
Yeah,
they're worse than the ones in the press room.
Interesting. What was your highlight? I suppose we should, give a nod to Glastonbury. What was your highlight, Glastonbury?
Glastonbury highlight was Portishead on Friday night, mm-hmm. and not having a drunk Scouser fall on my tent and break it in two like happened last year.
That's good. Well, that's just about all for tonight. Finally, I want to, though, plug a couple of things on humansevent.com. Tom Southam has done an interview with Jonathan Vauters and his role in cycling and changing cycling with Team Garmin-Sharp, and it's an excellent read as ever from Tom Southam. Watch out for other stuff coming on humansevent.com over the next few days and weeks during the Tour de France. That's all about all from us. Thank you, Lionel. It's really great to have you with us once more, reunited.
Loaded with sarcasm, Richard. Thank you.
Not at all. Daniel,
thank you.
Pleasure. And we'll speak to you tomorrow.